My name is Scott Redmond. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
everybody. I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you asking Nancy and I to come and talk this weekend and hang out with you. It's been a great time for us. We got in late last night. Chuck and his wife, Monica, picked us up. I don't know if any of you know Chuck, but not even the brain injury has held him back. He's a great guy, and you know, I met him in Kona, Hawaii, and when I met him in Kona, he said he was moving to Whitney, and from Kona, big lot of people moving from Kona to Whitney, and I said, "How's it working out for you here?" And you know, Monica said, "Oh, he's doing great. He's doing a lot of horseback riding, and he does cows." Now I'm from the Bronx. I don't know exactly what doing a cow is, but Chuck seemed to have a luster about him that he didn't have before. Oh, his wife buried him. Oh, my God. If you knew, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wanted to have a great life today. I'm sure that thrills the living crap out of you if you're new. Mike, congratulations on your award, and I hope you never win it again. And I love that when you walked up here, you kind of looked like you'd been most voted most attractive man on your cell block, kind of. You had that, yeah. Is this bad? Is it good? Is it good? Is it bad? They're going to give me a book. That's okay. That's all right. But unlike any, you know, when you go to the Moose Lodge, they don't go, "Who doesn't know anything about the Moose Lodge? Yeah! Give him a steak!" They say, "You're a moron. You're a moose moron. And keep coming back and we'll let you, you know, shine the antlers later on if you come back." And I just, there's so many friends here I have tonight and so many teachers. Bob B. has been a teacher of mine years before I ever met him. And Beverly Ross has been a teacher of mine and Nancy's before we ever met her, years before we ever met her. And my friend Beverly Burnett and George and I, people who I've known a long time and I've seen on campus for a long time that have enriched my life to an extraordinary extent. My other friends are here and my sponsee, Brent, who I just adore. And if you're new here, I'm sure you're thrilled for all of us. And I know that because I was just so happy for the people having a good time when I got here. I'd sit in my seat and I'd hear people talking about the new house and the family, and I'd go, "Oh boy, that's great. You know, maybe you'll go home tonight and maybe your new house will blow up, you know, maybe you'll blow up, and then we'll." We'll see how spiritual you are next week. I love my wife so much. I love hearing her talk. I always learn something new every time I... Oh, man. Man, oh, man, oh, man. And she's been a great teacher for me, too. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm about as lame as you can get. I just love it. Dallas and Texas hold a special little area of nightmare for us. I really took a run and jump at my bottom in Texas. And as you know, there are a few better places to drink in the world. And I want to tell you, it's just true. I have found that the greatest places to drink are the greatest places to get sober in, you know. And we... you know, you would just mention Texas to my wife, and she'd get that little tick would go, man. It was bad. It was really bad, you know. And as Nancy explained to you this morning, Jews don't drink. And I'm Jewish, and I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. Jews don't drink, by the way, because it might dull the pain. That's the primary reason that we don't drink. And because you don't want to squander any agony opportunity that presents itself. And it's funny because one of the first guys that saved my life in Alcoholics Anonymous in my first home group, which was probably the lamest corner of the universe that ever existed, this little godforsaken clubhouse I went to, this guy, I was a couple weeks sober, and this guy identified, he said, I'm an ex-Catholic, which means I do not believe in God, and I'm therefore positive God is going to come kill my ass for feeling that way. And I said, I'm going to go sit by him. Because I had been introduced to an Old Testament God who got your ass no matter what. He got your ass. He turned your wife to salt and killed your goat and put a finger in your eye, and he got your ass no matter what. No matter what. You had to speak in a foreign language to talk to the cat. And I did not have alcoholism when I came to AA. It took me years to catch I was a mild alcoholic for a while, you know, when I came in. But I have developed, I actually have a fatal case of alcoholism now. But I did not, I didn't have alcoholism when I came to AA. I had the Judaism. And I had also been in psychotherapy for 18 years by the time I got to AA. I was going to be dead, but I was going to understand it. But I was going to be like dead with no Oedipal conflict, but really dead. I caught alcoholism in AA meetings. The infection enters through the ear, and it infects you, and then you start actually infecting others. I grew up in the Bronx in New York City. No one from the Bronx. That witness protection program? Are you here? Right? Yeah. All right. To a completely insane family. My wife never believed me about my family until she met them. And my mom threw an engagement party for us, and my Aunt Rose came and wore her wig backwards. And it had a bun on it. And it was not a mistake. It was a look she was going after. Now, lest you think a lot has changed, a couple of years ago, my mother called me and said, honey, I got bad news for you. I said, oh, no, Mom, what happened? Your Aunt Lena died. Oh, no, Mom, when? A year and a half ago. I said, what? She said, well, you know, your Aunt Phyllis is back in the mental institution, and she calls me and harasses me, so I haven't been taking calls. But Phyllis passed away a couple of weeks ago, so I started answering the phone again, and they finally reached me to tell me that Lena's dead. So these are the communication skills that I was brought up with. This is the kind of interaction I had with my family. They just, you could throw a net over any section of the group at any time and not be sued for false arrest. They're just insane. I had an uncle who was one of the top 10 welterweights of the world. His name was Izzy Redman. He was concerned about anti-Semitism. He fought in Atlanta, Georgia in 1939 and changed his name to Izzy Goldberg so that no one would know he was Jewish. I wish I was lying. Because these are my people. This is my genetic pool. You don't go down to down at the bar. I'm from a long line of morons. I'm a moron. My DNA's unraveling while I'm talking to you. I'm just a complete moron. And my family did not have one single solitary thing to do with making me an alcoholic. If they had, the therapy would have worked. I could have gone to therapy, I could have worked out my family problems, and I could have drank like a normal person. I wouldn't have to go to parties anymore and say, oh, no, no heroin for me, I'll have a Perrier. I could just be like the normal people. Yow! One of my favorite writers, a guy who wrote a couple of wonderful books, non-conference approved literature, and probably two of my favorite history, Alcoholics Anonymous, has got to be a book called Not God. And the same gentleman wrote a book called The Spirituality of Imperfection, which is just an incredible book. And in it, he's one of the most beautiful, simple explanations I've ever heard. He says, in therapy you get understanding, and in AA you get forgiveness. It explains so much. Because I understood things so well in therapy, but I didn't have any moral application for the understanding. Uncover, discover, and then utilize. It says in our book that we long suspected that some form of moral psychology would be necessary. I didn't know what moral psychology was. I had lots of psychology. I know moral application. No doctor ever gave me a shot and said, okay, here's syringes, go shoot other people up. They never. In my case, it would have been a very bad idea anyway, but a particularly bad idea. But no doctor ever told me, said, here's the cure, please go apply it. And that's, of course, what you guys do immediately. Don't give away what you don't have, but what you have, give all of it. If all you got is a quarter in a car, give somebody a ride and lend them a nickel. Go do it, you know? And so I grew up in this nutty house in the Bronx, and I was put into therapy at a very early age because people started, you know, mistreating me pretty early on. And I started drinking until I wanted to be a drunk, and I overcame my alcohol problem with marijuana. I'd like to welcome all the pot smokers here tonight. You remember WOW, right? WOW.
WOW.
And right after WOW usually came, what? What? Wow, what, wow, what, wow, what, wow, what? Watching a pot smoker is like watching a dog try to run on linoleum. There's a lot of activity, but no movement. They just can't get a claw in the rug. I triumphed over marijuana with pills, and I was victorious over pills with cocaine. Cocaine's an excellent drug. It's particularly good for sex if you enjoy sex from the Neolithic period. And then I whenever I say that, a couple of newcomers look at their feet real quick, man. I'm telling you. But I didn't want to be a cokehead, so I started shooting heroin, and then I drank till I didn't want to be a drunk, and alcohol was on the table every day. And I never sat on anything in particular long enough to become that thing. When I was in my early 20s, my father had a massive stroke, and I was taken to the hospital, and I had shot some dope just before I was taken to the hospital. I was living in Manhattan. I was up in the Bronx, and I was hitchhiking, and my aunt and uncle pulled up on the highway and put me in the car, said, your father's in the hospital. I had just slammed some junk, and I couldn't show up for him or my mother or my brother the night that my father died. And my father was lost to me. I mean, I couldn't think about him. I couldn't talk about him. I couldn't look at a picture of him. I couldn't even listen to the sound of a heart machine like on a TV show because it sounded like a personal indictment of my collapse as a son and a brother and a man. And I knew what was wrong and I knew how to fix it. All I had to do was never shoot dope again. And I wouldn't be the guy who couldn't be there the night that his old man died. That's all I had to do, was not do that. So I just drank till I didn't want to be a drunk. And I was in my early 20s and I was living a dream. I wanted to be an actor and a director really my whole life from the time I was a little boy in New York. And I got to act in a Broadway play. And this new usherette with long brown hair walked into the theater and I took one look at her and I didn't even say hello to her. I walked back into the men's dressing room. I stood up on a chair and I said, if anybody talks to the new usherette with long brown hair, I'll break all the bones in your hands and feet. Had not even said hello to her. And so every time a guy walked near Nancy, he'd kind of go, dash away. And as she shared this morning, she picked me from column A. I was just lucky, I guess. And the earth just swallowed us up. We just absolutely fell in love. Living in New York City, I was acting in Broadway. We were in our early 20s. I mean, we didn't know we were just a couple of dogs trying to run on linoleum, but we were having a great time. We had a great time. Nancy became very, very ill from prolonged exposure to me. We became so sick that at one guy time, a guy this guy lent us his car, and we didn't have rent money. And at the end of the month, and I looked into my wife's eyes and I said, you know, I am so sick of being a punk, irresponsible kid. I am so sick of not doing the right thing. Let's not borrow money. Let's sell the car. And let's do the right thing. And she looked she looked at me with tears in her eyes and she said, let's do. And we sold this guy's car. And I will never forget this guy's voice on the phone as long as I live. He said, you sold my car? That's like house sitting for someone, and they come back, and you're in escrow. What do you mean? What do you mean you sold my car? When I call this guy 16 years later to pay him back, his voice was exactly the same. He said, you're paying me back? It's like he was frozen on that end of the phone the entire time. I came home one day. We had these 32-ounce tumblers in the house, and I popped a cork on a bottle of wine. I emptied the entire bottle of wine in this cup. And I turn around, and my wife is giving me the pre-Al-Anon rat face. This one. I said, what? She said, what are you doing? I said, I'm having a glass of wine. Can't a man have a glass of wine in his own home? We had our beautiful son, Micah. And like Nancy talked about this morning, we were surrounded by friends and family. There were a ton of phone calls. He was really, really welcomed into the world. And 2 years and 9 months later, when Jesse was born, there was nobody around. We had become completely isolated by the disease of alcoholism in just 2 years and 9 months. And it wasn't because people didn't love us. It just hurt too much to be around us. The ice around our heart had become so thick it had repelled everybody. And Jesse had transitive tachypnea of the heart, a bad thing for a little boy to have, and he was taken up to intensive care. And a doctor called me at home that night and said to me, Mr. Redmond, your wife is in tremendous psychological duress. Now, you guys know there's no greater place to be. It's the only nice time to be in a hospital is to go visit the maternity ward. And there's no when everything's okay. And when everything's not okay, it's probably the worst place to be in the whole world, especially when you have no higher power, when you are not in the middle of your community, which is, this is the way it got designed. This is when you're supposed to be in your community. This when is other people are supposed to bring in your harvest. This is all from time immemorial. This is when it happens. Can't stand a chance against alcoholism. Not cultural urge, not tradition, nothing. Nothing can stand in the way of alcoholism, you know? And she said, the child's up in an incubator. Your wife's all alone. She's having a real tough time. We need you to come down here. And I said, you know, I'd like to, but I can't find anybody to watch my two-year-old child. I can't find anybody to mind him. And this doctor who I had never met before, said to me, I'll tell you what, I'll give you my address. My husband's home. Why don't you give him a call, and you can take your kid over to my house, and my husband will watch him. And I said, no. I said no because there was absolutely no way. I had no tools to accept that generosity. I would have probably had to take one more look at and say, how did this happen? How do you get here? I mean, I'm taking my kid over to a stranger's house? I mean, my in-laws live here. My friends live in this town. What is going on? What is happening? You know? If you're new here and you don't have alcoholism, welcome to AA. If you don't, just stick around. Stick around long enough to get a diagnosis. If you've been building up a bright outlook for yourself and your family and ripping it down around your ears in a senseless series of sprees, if you fail to recall with sufficient force the memory of the pain and humiliation of even a day, a week, or a second ago and repeat the same insane behavior over and over again, if you protect your right to vomit, okay, you could have alcoholism. If you don't, what is wrong with you? What the hell is wrong with you? Consider the alternatives. You might do well by catching alcoholism. And the night I'm talking about, I didn't have it. I didn't even know what it was. If you had asked me, I would have said, well, yeah, sure. Okay, fine, good. You know, what? Do you get like a plastic dinnerware with it? What comes with it, you know? I didn't have a clue. And one of my wife's favorite moments in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is when Bill Wilson describes getting himself into a position in life where he is, it's just unbelievable. He's stealing from his wife's purse at night. He drags his mattress down from the upper floor so that he won't kill himself. He's opening the medicine cabinet and staring at poison, unable to take it. And after he describes this unbelievable, horrible place, he says, little were we to know this was to continue for 3 more years. And that was pretty much for us, it was 3 more years. It wasn't until 3 years later that I crossed the line I swore I would never cross again. I put a needle in my arm again. I had drunk till I wanted to be, didn't want to be a drunk, and one more time I had picked it up for the first time in 13 years. I was in my 18th year of psychotherapy seeing my first Jungian therapist, and I called him that morning. Now, why did I do it again? Why not? It was time. You know, whenever I'm with a new guy, and he's like 20, 30 days sober, and he says, geez, I really feel like drinking. And I say, well, how long have you been sober? He says, you know, 20 days. And I go, well, it's time, isn't it? Don't you think it's time for a drink? And we're actually going to do something else. We're going to accept the craving instead of treating it with a drink, and we're going to take an alternative route. That's an extraordinary thing. The defeat is not wanting to have a drink. Boy, imagine my shock that you'd want a drink, you know? So I had no mental defense against this, and I did it. And I called my therapist of record that morning, and he said to me the exact same thing that Carl Jung said to Roland Hazard, who 12-stepped, the man who 12-stepped Bill Wilson. I didn't know it, and when I was to come into our program and read our book, it really made me feel quite incredible when I read that this guy said the exact same thing to him. He said to me, there's absolutely nothing that can be done for you. I said, what? He said, I can't help you. The only thing I can suggest is you attend a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, or we have you institutionalized. Now, why I did not go to the Home for the Silly that day right away, I have no idea. On most other days, I would have gladly chosen the institution. Those are my people, colorful and adventurous people. And that's an uninterrupted source of narcotics for a period of time. Now, I want to tell you something. I'm 15 years sober. I am an enthusiastic, involved member of AA. I go to a lot of meetings. I sponsor a lot of men. Because a year ago, I was told I needed hand surgery. And the doctor says to me, you're going to need a general anesthetic. And I went, oh, general anesthetic, oh, man. Normal people don't get excited about general anesthetic. No normal person gets excited about general anesthetic. And I'll tell you why. You are generally anesthetized for general anesthetic. You're asleep, okay? But here's the deal. Here's what I know. They give it to you, and they say count backwards from 100. So you go 100, 99, and then you fall down, right? I love 99. I do. And apparently, you do too. It's not a slip, right? Even if I liked it. So I'm here. I ain't going nowhere. And it's a funny thing. I used to get excited when I was told I needed dental surgery. Normal people don't get excited about dental surgery, and I'll tell you why. I go right to announcement of dental surgery to painkillers. I skip the surgery. I leave out the whole middle. I skip out the sutures, the blood, the pain. Well, if you're new, welcome to the middle. We're really big on the middle, man. They're obsessed with the middle. Now, why I went to that AA meeting that morning, I have no idea. I have no idea why I didn't choose the institution. On most other days, I gladly would have. I went to one AA meeting, came home, had a glass of wine. My wife was, gave me a pain in the ass about drinking in AA. I don't know what her problem was. And I went to another meeting, and I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I put my best clothes on. I got a bad check to write you. And I went down. I was ready to pee in the cup and get on the mailing list. And never got to pee in that cup. And I walked into this little clubhouse in the San Fernando Valley, and I walked into this club, and I took one look around, and I said, oh my God, how did I wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh my God, how lame is this? This is beyond lame. This is beyond church, beyond synagogue. This is some plateau of lameness I never even imagined was available to me. Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything was a miracle. Miracle, miracle, I'm a miracle. I'm a miracle. The furniture and coffee are miracles too. And then they send the guy over. You know the guy, Mr. Unsolicited Information. Right up in your face. He's usually got one tooth with a cavity in it and is wearing a belt buckle large enough to serve an entire fish on, right? Do I want what you've got? No. No, but thanks for spitting on me. You're America. When do we do the arts and crafts? Are we going to hook a rug? Do I bring my own bib overalls next week? Am I issued a pair? Right, and I know the Jew hunt's going to take place any minute, right? That's going to, right? Strap on his antlers, Jaime. Poke him with a stick. Knock his beanie off. Let's see him run. We've needed a big buck Jew here for a while. Run him. Run that boy. Some of that AA-approved Jew bait out. Get him out there. I don't share that a lot. It's very painful for me. But I feel safe here, Beverly. I feel safe. I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated everything around it. I hated you. I hated the miracle. I had a couple of suggestions of where to store the book. The only reason I can imagine I stuck around here is I was out of plans. If you're new here, I pray for you that you are out of plans. If you're new here and you have a plan, it's probably a beaut. Don't use your plan. Grab one of us and tell us your plan. We want to know the plan. My favorite plan, I was mentioning it at dinner because I know a guy who actually used it. I know a bunch of guys who actually used it. The most popular newcomer plan I've ever heard of in AA. The one more dope deal to set myself up financially for sobriety plan. That's how it's going to wind up on the soft literature rack, I think, eventually. So. And I just hated it. I hated AA. I think I was out of plans, and I kept coming back. And my wife reached out to the Al-Anon family groups, and Al-Anon saved my life because my wife got this loving, gorgeous, fabulous sponsor who was and is incredible. And we would go to her house, and I would get glued up against the wall and just feel radioactive. All this love and activity going on, and she would never ever. It's just like, we're told in our book, just don't argue with them. Just don't argue. Like when the priest comes, and they start quoting the Bible, and they got 2 days, Don't argue with them. Say, you know the Bible, chapter and verse, but you are yellow in color, and. We're not saying we know God better than you. We just know God in a way that we're able to apply some spiritual tools to get out of this cycle of spree and remorse and into the cycle of surrender and commitment. That's all. That's all. You're smart and special. So special. My sponsor said to me, you're special, you're just not special. And Ruby and Milton were an incredible example. And she would never argue with Nancy. Nancy would call and say, oh, they're morons. And Ruby would go, I know, you're right. Come on over. You're right. She'd never argue. She'd never say they're not morons. We were morons. It was a difficult point to argue. Come on over. We're baking. Come on over. We're having a party. Come on over. We're putting makeup on a new girl. Come on over, And it was like Nancy said, she used to put the boys in, and the boys would be, Nancy would feed them granola and say, okay, boys, get in the car with Dr. Death now. There you go. Hope you live. Have a good day. It was just insanity. Absolute insanity. And a heartbreak, just heartbreak, out of nowhere. I think it was Micah. Micah was a little boy who was 5. Out of nowhere, Micah walks up to a family in McDonald's out of nowhere and says, my father's an alcoholic and my mother has cancer. Out of nowhere. And my wife walked up to that table and looked at this family and said, I can tell you one thing for sure, my husband's not an alcoholic. This happened in our life. This happened in our life. This is extraordinary. I mean, this is extraordinary. That could be an event in the daily life of a family. To be that ill, to be that crushed by this disease, And Nancy says she saw it in me, and I say I saw it in her. We saw something in each other. I certainly didn't see it in myself. I waited till I was 6 months sober, enjoying the gift of step none. You know the gift of step none? Nothing. until I got a sponsor and started doing the work. And one day Milton called our sons over. They were little boys. He called them over and he said, "Boys, your parents don't know shit." And the kids went, "Oh yeah, we suspected, but we couldn't get confirmation, and now we know. Oh, thank God." They were like almost started weeping with joy. It was like, And at 6 months of sobriety, I knew I was going to drink. I'd see the AA drill hundreds of times. In just 6 months, people came in and did the work and changed. People came in, didn't do the work, didn't change, got sick, got sicker, got to the podium, shared their gift with us, and shared their ass right out the door, or stayed here and became columns of human sewage and sexual predators, although I judge no man. And because I'm just too darn spiritually developed to judge anybody. So I knew I was going to drink, and I asked this guy to sponsor me. Great guy, still is a great guy. Happy guy, who wasn't afraid to be an AA goody-goody. Got up to the podium and talked about the work he was doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, people get up, and I understand what they're saying. They say, I used to know a lot, I know less all the time, and now I know nothing. And I always go, well, I'm not going to ask him any questions. But I understand what people are saying when they say that. I understand it. And by the same token, I really needed to, and I still need people who have good information, a lot of information, who have good mechanics, who are really doing this thing and really have an enlightened view on it. You know, that's why I started listening to Bob's tapes when I was really young in sobriety and was under this incredibly harebrained idea that I was to no longer have problems. Like the other great religious and spiritual leaders in the world, all of whom never had problems, except a little problem like the Romans. And I asked this guy to sponsor me. He made sure I did some reading for the Big Book of AA, and he invited me to his apartment, and he spent hours with me for fun and for free, and I couldn't figure out why. I didn't know what this guy wanted from me. And all he wanted from me was, if I got well, it was to pass it on to another man, which I didn't believe. I knew there was sometime the spiritual Amway would come out, some or something. And he took the first two steps with me. We reached step three and got on our knees and prayed, which I thought was embarrassing and unnecessary. And we did it. And then he went back and he gave me instructions on how to do a fourth step from the Big Book of AA. And I stopped feeling like I was stealing someone's chair here. I've been going to a book. You know, if you go to a step study, if I go to a step study, and anybody sharing begins with the following sentence. Well, I've never actually worked this step, but I always think, well, then, but what in God's name will you be talking about? It's sort of like going, like being a mechanic, and the guy going, geez, these cars, what the hell, how do they work? You know, what? Thanks for bringing that in. We're all going to be bound to learn something here. although I judge no man. And now I was actively involved with the work, and I really felt like part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had been going to some AA meetings where I didn't even hear a passing reference made to God, the Big Book, or the steps, and if I would just hear about boundaries and issues. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you gotta not drink. The not drinking part's a moose. If it was not for the not drinking part, we would be a much bigger organization. I guarantee it. This not drinking thing screws a lot of people up. And if you don't drink, you will have a boundary and an issue. I guarantee you. I guarantee you. But you gotta not drink. And at 9 months of sobriety, I went back and I did my read my fourth step to my sponsor. I did step five. I did step six and seven for the first time, which had become my working template for my relationship with God. Then it came time to do my eighth step list. And I try to share this anytime I talk because it's simply the best reading of step eight I have ever heard in my entire life. I heard it real early in sobriety. I was a couple of months sober, and I was at my old home group, this men's group, and there was a guy there named Nino. He had a heavy New York accent. He was there with a hospital group, and he had never read chapter 5 before, ever. Never heard it. And he was asked to read it in front of this group that night. And he got up to step 8, and he read, made a list of all those we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. Jesus Christ! And he looked out into the room as if to say, have you seen this? Do you know what's in here, man? It was so beautiful. It was so pure. It was the purest reading of the step I had ever heard. Because it's the only step I saw when I looked at the list. No, not those people, not that money, no. I would not have taken that much money if I knew I had to give it back. No way. Not the car. Not the car. If you knew, don't worry, it's 8 steps from where you are right now. And 8's really not the annoying one. 9. Really annoying. Bob's talk about it was so beautiful today. He talked about the most annoying part of 9, which is the actual payment of the money. He mentioned that guys would actually do lists of their creditors, that it's not just a totally spiritual experience you have by yourself. I wrote up my 8-step list. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do about it. I didn't know what I was going to do about my dad. He was dead. And I didn't know what I was going to do about Nancy and the boys. I could not sit down with my wife and say, hey, honey, sorry about this 8-year suicide pact. we've called a marriage. Okay. I couldn't sit down with my sons and say, sorry, you've had no life. And I didn't know what I was going to do about my dad. A lot of things that people do in AA just didn't work for me. I couldn't go to the grave and apologize, and I couldn't write a letter. I couldn't do it, and it scared me that it wouldn't work, because I thought then there would be absolutely no answer for me. It scared me. I was like ashamed to talk about it. And I sponsor plenty of guys where those tools work for me. See what happened. So I started doing my job in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, when I came in, and this is still true for me, you hear a lot of things. Anytime anybody uses we or you a lot, I pretty much have this off button. I pretty much click off. If people tell their story, that's pretty much the freight here. That's the freight. Except when I'm, you know, listening to workshops and stuff like that, I want to hear about it more in a general way, about the work and information about and that stuff. And I hear a lot of stuff about alcoholics in general, most of which, if the stuff that's not in the book, doesn't work for me. You hear that alcoholics don't like change. I just don't like change I don't like. But I really love change I like. But I don't mind, you know, I don't dislike all change. But you hear sometimes alcoholics don't like change. I just don't like the change that pisses me off. The change that's thrilling, oh, bring it on. I've even heard at meetings that alcoholics are above average intelligence. I have only heard this at Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I have never heard it at an Al-Anon meeting. Ever. 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 And if you're new, you're going to hear some wacky stuff about alcoholism. You'll hear, you know, somebody might say to you, gee, isn't AA just a crutch? Which is like saying to a diabetic, are you still on insulin, man? Are you like, what? Why can't you show some gumption, some backbone? What do you need that insulin for? Alcoholism is viewed as a disease by the AMA, the World Health Organization, and every association of therapists and doctors on the planet. To say, and Alcoholics Anonymous has the biggest aggregate of recovery of any treatment in the world. To say that AA is a crutch is one of the most boneheaded, misguided, ignorant things, although I judge no man, but be kind to these people. So I started doing my job in AA. I had to do a lot of lame crap. Really lame. I had to like start showing up at flag football and coaching Little League and showing up at school. I had to go to school. We had to go to school. Really hard, really embarrassing. Because by the time I got here, our kids were just a wreck. Jesse was playing these war games he couldn't stop playing because it was just safer to be in a war of his own design.
couldn't come back like Adam. He was so distracted from these robot games. Micah was had his small motor skills were all screwed up. He was making these involuntary clicking noises with his throat he couldn't stop making. He couldn't stop grinding his teeth. The boys were just an absolute mess. They were incredibly and are incredibly intelligent, could barely read or write. It was, you know, testing in excess of 145 IQ and could barely read or write. They were distracted and terrified. If you get in between me and the drink, and you're my son, my wife, my lover, my buddy, my bride, my dreams, if you get in between me and the drink, you will disappear or you will turn to paper mache. You will either vanish or you will become something less than human, because I will answer the bell. Believe me, I will answer the bell. I'll either walk through you or I'll walk around you. And if I walk around you, then this horrible process of having to walk bigger and bigger circles because it hurts too much to see you, and my life becomes all about this extremity, this course around things, until it just becomes this big, bloated, hollow, meaningless journey. This circuit to the same place every time, which is the drink. You know, that point of focus. And in our house, how much disappearing can a child bear before they believe they believe it? They just float away. And in our house, they either become pointlessly aggressive en route to a goal that can never be attained, or they just throw in the towel. What's the use of it anyway? And if you take a look at those attitudes, they're mirrored in the second and third chapters of our book, in those lists they wrote about us. What's the use anyway? I'll stop after the sixth drink, my personal favorite. How did this happen again? You'd think he'd get sober for her. Why can't he lay off the hard stuff? You know, it's mirrored and ingrained in every life that's deeply affected by alcoholism. One of my favorite statements in Al-Anon readings and Al-Anon literature have been so helpful to me and so important is that part of the reading that says alcoholism is just too much for one person to live with. And I realized why that hit me so hard, because as a result of surrendering in AA, I was finally able to admit my alcoholism is too much for me to live with. And what a great tool as a sponsor to know that other men's alcoholism is too much for me to live with. And we had to go into school and say, look, our kids are sick because we've been very ill and we need help. And we said, can you help us? Not once as a member of AA ever have I gone to truly ask for help, and without, not to bully or manipulate, but to really ask for help. And has someone said no? Never. They said, sure, let's test them. You know, my wife, and as usual, an incredible example with this stuff. Going in, advocating for our kids, you know. They got special classes cut loose for them. They got trained. The teacher said, get them into sports, get them into music. Jesse wanted to play drums. I went and took $10 of dope money and spent it on a drum pad. That's what he wanted. I went down to my home group and told them what I had done, because I was really proud of it, you know. This little piece of wood with a little piece of rubber and two drumsticks. But I got the thing. Our kids have gotten 15 appropriate birthday gifts on the day of their birthday. Not once in 15 years have they received the day after radioactive guilt gift from the only place that would take a hot check from me, right? Here, boys, here's some drywall. All the kids are loving the drywall. It's Pokemon drywall. So we've exercised the birthday muscle for 15 years. On my kid's birthday, I don't feel guilty. I did for a long time. And I told the guys in my home group I bought Jesse this drum pad, and a couple of weeks, the AA drum set showed up at our house. I had like a lot of burnout drummers in my home group at that time, and like guys are showing up with these tom-toms and bass drums, dude. And Jesse had this drum set. He'd sit behind it and disappear. You couldn't even see him. And last year our sons played the House of Blues in L.A. and burnt the dump down. Burnt it down. Lit them up. And then there's this small group of middle-aged AA uncles off to the side weeping, you know. My wife's over there with all the wheat. And it's a hip-hop crowd, you know, shoulder to shoulder going, what is with the crying old guys, man? What the hell is that all about? I was a couple years sober. I was making my son's lunch. And I said to Michael, what do you want on your hot dog? He said, I want mustard, onions, and lettuce. And I said, lettuce? He said, okay, I don't want lettuce. And he walked away, and he came back about 45 minutes later, and he looked at me directly in the eyes, and he said to me, and I'm not altering one syllable, he said to me, I will never again allow your opinion of what I want affect what I ask for. So I asked him to sponsor me at that point. A couple of years after that, Jesse had a schoolyard accident. He broke his wrist in a growth plane, which, if you know how kids develop, that's cartilage that's going to turn to bone. Once it's set, it can't be messed with. It's real important that it's set right because it's going to be a bone in a while. And they're brothers, so I bring them home from the hospital. They're beating the crap out of each other in about 15 minutes. And I had to let Micah know that this was not something I could repeat 12 times. I had to stop. So I got in his face and I yelled at him. He walked away from me. He walked to his room, slammed the door. Slammed the door. So I got the dad tick going now. I slam the door. So I go to the door and I open the door. And before I can unload on him, he says, oh. He says, I didn't say you were wrong out there. You were right. But a big guy just got in my face and screamed and yelled at me. I didn't say you were wrong. Don't tell me I can't be mad. What's that? What the hell is that? That's what he has been watching his mother and I trying to do with varying degrees of success and failure as members of AA and Al-Anon, to overcome a fear of confrontation. You see, I know how to, I was completely bereft of any tools to fight. I can't fight. I scream until you shut up or I cry until you shut up. Screaming's fine, and the tyranny of helplessness, also good, very good. Also, I like to loom. I'm a loomer, I'm big. I like to loom with a light behind me so she's in my shadow. It's like a total eclipse of the Jew, you know. I like getting it out there, right? Now, if I can work a scream, a cry, and a loom into one, that's a hat trick. I mean, that's the trifecta. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that. These were my communication skills as a member of our marriage. To overcome a fear of confrontation. And to tell somebody what I need without telling them what to do. To tell somebody how I feel. And to tell somebody what I need without playing God. I see, if I told you my feelings, those were just that's a list of instructions. That's not an expression of feelings. Now you're going to have to attend to each one of these expressions of feeling in a way. And we've been able to do that. You know, but we had, I never acted like a man. I never felt like a grown man my entire life until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even know what that meant. I was the crushed up, disgusting, pathetic guy who couldn't even be there for 5 minutes to give my pop a kiss on the forehead before he went. You know? That's not a man. That's not the way a man behaves. Now, I didn't know. I thought that my manhood would be given to me when my humility award was given to me in AA. There would be a dual ceremony. And I didn't know that I was going to, how that was going to happen. And when I did my fourth step, one of my resentments was against my wife for calling me a pig all the time, because I was a pig. And I had an attending resentment against myself for being a pig. I'm resentful of Nancy for telling me I'm a pig. It affects my self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, and sex, a five-bagger for sure. What are the defects of character in me that if God would remove the resentment would be gone? Resentment's no big deal. It's just the source of all spiritual disease, the great destroyer of all alcoholics. It'll cut you off from the sunlight of the spirit, drag your ass out, and kill you dead. But don't be alarmed. No biggie. See, because I don't just dislike her. I hate her. I hate her with a hot hatred that if I wake up in the morning, I water this hatred. I care for this hatred like a little flower. If I forget the hatred for a while, I snap out of it to remind myself, and I've got to hate it doubly for a while to make up for the lost hatred time. I hate things and re-experience this hatred so that when my head hits the pillow, it becomes a rotisserie. It eats my brain and my heart and turns my life black and throws me out of my own life. That's how I experience this cancer of the soul. And these fears, and this sexual misconduct. Sexual misconduct rarely involves anyone except for me in the little sweaty Hades of my mind. So what are the defects against my wife for saying I'm a pig? I'm sloppy. I'm irresponsible. I'm a grudge holder. I'm stubborn. I have silent scorn. I'm not trusting in God. I have false pride, low self-esteem, and I also had a resentment against myself, a connection with others. I was resentful of myself for being a slob. What does this have to do with sobriety? Absolutely nothing unless you're going through it. Absolutely nothing except if you're going through it. Alcoholics Anonymous is about one thing and one thing only. Absolutely one thing, not drinking. In order to not drink, it's just like the beautiful, pamphlet we have on the concepts, where it has the most hysterical corporate pyramid ever invented. It's this one. Where the rank and file members of Alcoholics Anonymous are the top level, and you can't get lower than trustee. You can't, that is the, it is, I love it. I love looking at the thing, you know? And so this is the stuff I had to take a look at, you know? I didn't even know how to clean my house. I thought that a certain amount of housework should equal a certain amount of sex. That there should be like a conversion tables on the back of cleaning products, you know, of housework to sex. And I just want to tell you, anytime I share that, a couple of guys come up to me afterward just thanking me for the idea, you know. So I just, man, wake up. And I don't like to clean, and I don't want to clean, and you know what? I don't even know how to clean. And what the voice said to me when I went in 6 and 7, and I said, humbly ask him to remove these defects. Humbly isn't take him if you can, big guy. Humbly isn't take him, you rotten. Humbly is, Pop, I can't bear this anymore. I can't. Can you do this for me? I'll do this for you. Will you do it for me? When I drew close to him, he revealed himself to me. And the voice inside me said, clean the house for me. Now, I just want to tell you, if you had told me on my first day that if this really works, why, by God, you'll clean your house for God. And my wife's really laughing because I still don't clean the goddamn house. But I do feel like a grown man. Our sons just did great. And like Nancy was talking about this morning, one of our sons, just some calamitous stuff started happening to him. He was asked. He got thrown out of high school for dealing drugs, and he just really bad breaks and misunderstandings, and just really. And I couldn't believe that my son would be having any difficulty because of the, you know, obviously he wasn't listening to my tapes. I'll tell you that. A man of my spiritual caliber, it just wasn't right, and. I remember Nancy came home a couple of days after Micah started having trouble. I said, how was your meeting? She said, oh, it was so great. I said, you talked about it? She said, yes, honey. You know what my club's about? We actually did. And I remember, no, you know. And then that relief came. Of course she's talking about it. Of course I need to talk about it. Of course we need to be with our friends. You know, we got nailed in the Northridge earthquake. Really hurt. I'm sure some of you remembered. It was 4 or 5 years ago, and it was really bad. And we were right in the epicenter of it. And we were at an AA thing at Beverly, in fact, with Beverly shortly after the up in Vancouver. And this woman walked up to me at the function, and she said to me, "Oh, I'm so glad God got us out of LA before the quake, because they used to live there." And I said, oh, so he likes you. He likes you, but we're crap, but he likes you. And she said to me, I guess he just felt you had some lessons to learn. And I'm telling you, man, I'm out of here. I am out of here. If I got a guy up there saying, get him, get Redmond, get the Redmond boy. Get him, no evacuation plan for you, Jew boy. Get him. Can't stay sober in that world. Don't want to stay sober in that world. Not in that rat's maze. Not for 5 minutes. I know that God's keeping her sober. A guy couldn't keep me sober for 10 minutes. And I would like to see her after her next lesson, but I judge no man. I had to get a God big enough so a lot of things could happen in this world, and I didn't get to drink. That's just what happens at our house. That's what's happening in our house that week. I mean, right now, the kids are just doing great. Nancy and I are really having a great, exciting, romantic time together. We're planning our 25th wedding anniversary in June, and we're really having a great time. And I don't... And, you know, for my money, that's not because God likes us more than the people who are getting divorced. That's just what's happening in our house. My God expects me to do my job in AA if we're living on the house of the hill or a refrigerator box, if we stay together or if we're divorced. You know, and this notion that somehow, I don't have a spiritual scorekeeper. You know, I don't buy it, you know. And it's one of the reasons Bob's been such a great teacher to me, because the guys who don't have any problems in sobriety, that's fine. I don't know if they're hiding anything or not. It doesn't matter to me. It's not a help to me, because I got a lot of problems. I got a lot of problems, and then I got periods where I don't have a lot of problems. But if I have too much spiritual pride to sit down with a man and look at him in the eyes and say, you know what, I'm scared of my wife. I'm scared of going home. I'm so scared that the boys aren't watching the right thing. They're not eating the right food. I'm so scared that when I hear her car pull up in the carport, I'm dashing around the house making sure everything's okay. That's living with active alcoholism. Is it my wife's fault? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. She's not walking in with a chalkboard. It's just when I'm in that insanity, I start my mind-reading skills kick in. You know, when that garden hose vein starts pumping on your forehead. You know, it's bad enough when people are doing things behind your back and then they start talking behind your back. But when they start thinking behind your back, it's really ugly, you know. I was about, I guess, 2-3 years sober, and I was sort of becoming a spiritual Goliath. I was sponsoring a lot of guys, and I had a ghostwriting job at Paramount Pictures, and I got offered this job directing a situation comedy. And I thought at the time that it would really benefit the guys I sponsor if I got this job. It would really be very good for them. And I didn't get the job, and I almost drank. And I was humiliated. I went to my sponsor. I told him what happened. And he said, oh, I guess you have the show business God. I said, what? He said, well, what keeps you sober? I said, God. He said, and you didn't get a show business job, and you almost drank. So I guess you have the show business God, and he has abandoned you utterly. And I sat down and I wrote, I'm resentful at Scott for almost drinking. I'm resentful at the company for not giving me the job. And I wrote out the defects, and my sponsor said to me, you know, when you do 6 and 7 this time, you're really going to have to, you're going to actually have to put up, you're going to have to put your money where your mouth is. You're going to have to find out what you're going to have to do to stay sober. And I heard him, and I said my prayer that day, and I said, Pop, you got it. Take show business. I'll do anything you want me to do for a living. Just keep me sober. I'll do anything. And within 3 months, I was working as a cook on a catering truck. And I looked up to God, and I said, I did not mean this. We've had a grotesque misunderstanding. I did not mean this. Now, in L.A., when they make a TV show or movie, is the air conditioning on? Great. So the people who have slipped into a coma have absolutely no excuse. When they make a TV show or a movie in L.A., they hire a caterer, you follow the guys around, you make food for them, and it's a great job. It's Teamster dough. You're in a movie set on a vehicle. You make a lot of money. But I'm Scott Redmond, and I'm cooking on the show. First movie that I catered, and the guy who was the star and executive producer of it walks up to the truck. He was a guy who I had worked with in the business, and he stuck his head on the truck that morning, and he said, can I have a burrito, Scott? And I said, what's happening, babe? And he said, is this your truck? I said, no, but it's my spatula. And I got home, I called my sponsor, and I said, now I'm really getting the gift now, man. I really, this is really beautiful. And he said, sounds like you've got a resentment. I'm resentful of Scott for working on the kitchen truck. It affects my self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, and sex. What are the defects of character in me that if God came down, magic wand, blue skies, he's got a magic wand, he touches me on that. What poison in me, life-ending poison in me, would be gone, would this soul sickness be gone? I'm playing God. I'm impatient. Things aren't moving along. I'm playing God. Things aren't going according to the Scott Redmond program, a fabulous program. I'm ashamed. I'm ungrateful. I just got sober. I'm making dough, man. Guys get sober, they don't even work, you know? I have false pride. I'm a people pleaser. This is the list I had to bring to my higher power, man. And I worked this 10th step, and I wound up serving people who had been my assistant directors, my stage managers, actors I had directed in TV shows. I would come back to my home group with a new tale of humiliation every week. The guys would go, ah! Tears streaming down their face, you know. And I got to help some guys who thought they had fallen from a height in AA. I had a friend named Paul who used to say this prayer. He'd say, Father, I'm willing to do anything for a living, as long as you keep me sober, but don't let it be as bad as what you did to Scott. And I worked that 10th step, and I grew spiritually, and I showed up and gave them a dime for their nickel. And, you know, my son Jesse eventually said, boy, Dad, could you teach me how to cook? And we'd go to the market and buy what was fresh, and we got to cook together. He was more excited about me being a cook than he ever was about me being a writer. And we got to do it together, you know. And I was doing it for about 3-4 years, and I got an overture made to me by a company named Ketchum Public Relations for this big-time comedy writing job. And by that time, I really felt very, very deeply that this really would benefit the men I sponsored, because they had seen me suffer, and now they would see me prosper thusly. You don't get to use the word thusly a lot, but I try to work it in every talk I give. So my brain blew up before I even found it. I had to do a videotape for him. I did that, and I just crashed and burned before I even heard about it. I read the inventory of my sponsor. I released it, and then I get a call from Ketchum saying I did not have the job, and I was fine with it. And then a little while after that, I get a call to cater some commercials up in the mountains above L.A. And I hop into the truck, and I get up there, and I get the call sheet, which gives you all the information about the shoot. And I see in the call sheet that the commercials are for Ketchum Public Relations. I'm feeding them now. Now I'm feeding them. And I see down at the end of the truck, there's a guy with a video camera, and he's taping me. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, we're taping the making of the commercial. He's taping my humiliation. He's taping my humiliation. He's going to go to New York. He's going to show him the tape, and they're going to go, is that Scott Redman with the meatloaf? Is that him? I get off work. I call my sponsor. I said, oh, we're really getting the gift now. Oh, yeah. It's a miracle. It's just a miracle is what it is. And he said to me, he said, you know, I guess God had enough writers today and he needed a few cooks. And then he said, you know, you told God you wanted to work for Ketchum and you forgot to tell him what you wanted to do. I didn't know really much about Al-Anon when I was new. My wife put this tape in, and she started listening to this tape and started laughing her ass off. I had forgotten what that even sounded like, her laughing her ass off. She called me over, and it was Beverly Ross. And we listened to this tape, and I just thought, they're laughing in that organization? I just thought it was a place that, you know, it was like an emergency room, you know, where these crushed humans went. I didn't know it, you know? And I fell in love with her. And it's an incredible thing. Our family, which we never, ever thought was going to come back to where it's come back to. One of the reasons, the many, many reasons Beverly means so much to me is we were at a conference a while ago together at the State Al-Anon Conference in Texas. And I saw my wife talking, and I saw Beverly laughing while Nancy was talking. And it was an incredible experience for me. To see Beverly loving my wife, to see Beverly enjoying her, to see her, because she was one of the first things that started melting the ice around our heart. And to see that process is just absolutely beyond any level of, you know, it's an amazing thing. If you're new here, there's a lot of things we can only explain to you. We can't. You know, and understanding and forgiveness are two different things. We can only explain it to you. I can't deliver to you the knowledge of what it feels like to live without resentment. I know what that feels like. And then I know what, so that when I get sick again, I know what that feels like, and then I know what I have to do about it. But I never knew what it was like to feel resentment free since I was a very, very tiny boy. But now, when I have resentment, it's as if my appendix is burst and I go toxic. I can't. It's like trying to explain sex to somebody. You know, I can't tell you what the feeling's like, although my wife came very close this morning. as close as I've ever really heard anybody come. A couple of years ago, our son Michael was babysitting for someone on the program, this couple on the program. And the guy said to him, what do you think of hearing your dad talk in AA? And Michael said, I don't really think anything. I'm not a member, and I don't really care much about it. He said, all I can tell you is since I'm a very, very little boy, the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon have taken very, very good care of me, and never once has any of them demanded that I believe what they believe. What an extraordinary expression of what Dr. Bob said you will get if you boil all these 12 principles down to their essence, which is love and service. What a beautiful expression of that. And that's based on his information, his participation in AA Al-Anon family. Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, Alcoholics Anonymous is about not drinking. That's all we're about. The Washingtonians and the Oxford group chose to become about something else, and they went away. And by the same token, what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of not drinking? I have a home group that, where gay and straight men attend a meeting together and do not put up with any homophobia, so that the gay men who I sponsor and other men who are there, that's just a tradition in our group. That's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. I talk in Greenville, Mississippi, where segregation has failed. It didn't work. And my host tells me that he walked into his first AA meeting and he saw African American and white people hugging each other for the first time he'd ever seen it in his community. If we go out there to get these issues resolved with Alcoholics Anonymous as an instrument, we will fail, we will go away, we will become a couple of cautionary pages in a history book. But if we go out there again and again to stop drinking, to help another guy, to help a woman, to put the name of Al-Anon out there, to protect the family, to spread the light and the love, all this other stuff, all this residual stuff takes place, this bounty. It is extraordinary. The good news is our problem mainly rests in our mind, because there's no other text about recovery from a fatal illness that contains the phrase, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. There's no book about cholera that says cholera is a hoot. You'll love cholera. It's fabulous. You'll meet other people with cholera. Oh, that's great. Then you'll meet people who just caught cholera. It doesn't get much better than that. But from that one miracle, which is the fact that when I want to drink, I don't, that central miracle, it's made all of these other miracles possible. And the great news is my problem mainly rests in my mind. Otherwise, I wouldn't need moral psychology. Otherwise, I wouldn't need, the Oxford group believed in evangelizing and conversion. And we don't believe in evangelizing, but we do experience conversion. And the bad news is, our problem mainly rests in our mind. And because of that, we see all this wacky stuff, And if you're new, I just want to urge you to appreciate that. I want to urge you to work with it. I want to urge you to reach out. If you have some weird thinking that leads you to doing some drinking that you can't stop doing, and it results in this soul sickness that eats you up and leaves you hollow and insane and alone, you got it, I met this newcomer years ago, and I talked to him, and he explained to me, he called me, I met him at a meeting, he called me when I got home, and he talked to me for like an hour. And I said, four times so he'd know that I wasn't dead. And at the end of the hour, he said to me, gee, I feel so alone. And I said, well, what do you mean? I just talked to you for an hour. I don't even know you. I just listened to you for an hour without interrupting. What do you mean you feel alone? And he said, well, I don't have a woman. And now he had explained to me that he had been stalking several women and that he had a restraining order against him. And I said to him, what exactly would you be bringing to a relationship right now besides stalking skills? What exactly are you bringing to the party right now? People 2 weeks into remission from leukemia are not having dating problems. Alcoholics are, because we trivialize our problem. One day, Nancy was walking through our room, and I was on the phone with a new guy, and she heard me saying to the phone, let's say the aliens are coming. So she stopped short. She ain't missing a minute of this. I said to the guy, look, I'm not telling you the aliens aren't coming. That's an outside interest. They might very well be coming. I have one question for you. Why you? Why have they come for you? Why have they traversed the universe for your sorry ass? You're 11 days sober. You have no life. Why you? Maybe like a world leader or a male guy or something, you know? Plus, he's sleeping with a Bible on his chest to ward them off. So they're going to like traverse the universe, walk into his room and go, oh no, the Bible, let's go home. I'm telling this story a couple of years later, and the guy who I'm telling it about walks into the room. So I'm watching the guy as I'm telling it, he's going, oh, shit. And I see the horrible memory. If you're new and the aliens are coming for you, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome home. I love you, Texas. Thank you.